Well, tonight we're going to talk about an awakening, your awakening with a True Life Awakening coach. That's right. Arjuna Arda joins us. One of his books is called The Translucent Revolution, how people just like you are waking up and changing the world. He's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. Well, let me tell you a little bit about the awakening coach. Arjuna Arda has traveled the world training more than 13,000 coaches to help facilitate awakening. And millions of people right now all over the planet are having glimpses of just who they really are beyond these endless thoughts and reactive feelings. Such a moment changes everything, and it unleashes just about everything within you. Here he is on Coast to Coast, Arjuna Arda. Hey, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. It's a great pleasure to be with you tonight.
How did you get involved as being an awakening coach? How did that all start for you?
Wow. Well, I think, you know, if I was to really trace it back to its origins, I would have to say it started with suffering.
Yes.
Oh, isn't that where everything starts when you want to change something in your life? It's because of suffering, you know. And I grew up in the, I was born in the 1950s in London. And I would say my family probably had an above average level of suffering. You know, I grew up with intellectual parents in London, and you know, everything that went along with that just after the war. So by the time I got to be a teenager, I realized when you get to be a teen, you know, that's the first time that you can really evaluate your family of origin and compare a little bit. When you're a child, it's just your family, and beyond your family is the world that you don't know so much about. So when I got to be a teenager, I realized, wow, you know, I better do something.
Yeah.
I'm either going to go crazy or kill myself, you know. So I realized I had some habits I'd inherited from my family that were not functional, not healthy. So, but this was now early 70s when I was a teenager. So the most obvious thing, the most available thing was psychotherapy. So I got a little interested in psychotherapy, but quickly I realized, at least back at that time, the therapists were in worse trouble than their patients.
Yeah.
So then I started to hear about, you know, what is loosely called spiritual practice, which means somehow inquiring into levels of yourself deeper than the mind and reactive emotion. So I was 14. I learned meditation back then, and then there's been a lot of other phases in that in between, but that was how the whole thing started, was really quite innocently, I would say, wanting to alleviate unnecessary psychological suffering.
Did you have that quest too about, you know, what am I doing here? Who am I? What am I supposed to be doing here? I think that we all go through that, don't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, not only do we all go through it, but I think it's the most important thing that anyone can possibly do is to pay attention to those questions and give them some space. Because there's so much demand on our attention, on our time, that to actually ask that question, you know, the way you phrased it, who am I? What am I doing here? What's my reason for being here? And even more important than that, in my opinion, is to ask yourself, what is your deepest longing? Deeper than the desires we've been taught, the things we've been taught to want, the things we've been taught to fear. What is it deep in you authentically that longs to express itself? And it could start with just wanting to be married and happy and wanting to have enough money. But quickly, I'm sure it would spread. That question spreads into, what kind of a world do you want to help create? What do you want to participate in and contribute to? And these questions actually are absolutely at the beginning of every awakening coaching relationship. So at the beginning of every training of new coaches, at the beginning of every weekend seminar, the beginning of every individual coaching relationship, that's the most fundamental question. What is your deepest longing? And sometimes it requires drilling down a few layers deeper than what we've been taught to want and taught to fear, to rediscover and reconnect with, what could you call it? You know, it's often been referred to like your soul's longing, or your that deepest part of you that sometimes we give up on it. We give up on what we really most deeply intuit is possible.
This awakening that you talk about,
yeah,
Why does it take some people so long to wake up and some other people, they don't wake up at all? They just don't get it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, George, awakening is a word, you know, and people obviously mean many, many different things by that word. People have different associations with language. Now, if we use a word like, you know, car or chair, it's fairly commonly understood what we mean by it. But awakening is a little bit more conceptual. So I think it's important.
Yes.
I think it would be important for me to explain what I mean by that word. Would that be okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
It may be different for different people.
Sure.
So what I mean by awakening is actually incredibly simple. And actually, in a way, in a sense, consciously or unconsciously, everybody is tapping into it all the time. They may not realize it, but it's very fundamental. So what awakening means is this. All day long, you and me and everybody listening to the program now and everybody in the world is having experiences, right? That means that we're seeing things, we're hearing things, and we're feeling things, and we take it very much for granted. That is the fabric of our day-to-day experience. We're having endless sensory-based experiences. We're also, most everybody is having a pretty incessant commentary on that as well, which usually runs quickly into the past, into the future. So that's, you know, whatever your beliefs, whatever your background, wherever you live, whatever your circumstances, that's common to most people. We're experiencing things, and we're having a lot of thoughts as well. Now, when we have an experience, you and I and everybody we know, we use simple language. We say, I hear your voice, right? That's a completely normal thing to say, and it's fairly meaningful. I hear your voice, right? You would say that, wouldn't you? I hear your voice. Or I see the microphone, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We refer to I being in a relationship with our experience. However, that I remains for most of us unexamined. There's nothing that we need to necessarily accomplish or attain. We simply haven't fully examined the nature of our own experience in this moment as it already is. Because I am hearing sounds, so we know what the sounds are. We know what the hearing is. It's the sound waves reaching the eardrum. But what is the nature of this thing we call I that is actually hearing and seeing and feeling? Now, when we ask that question of ourselves, the first thing that we come up with is a story, you know? I was born in Wisconsin, and I'm a plumber, and I vote for this or that person, and I drive this kind of car, and I have these beliefs and these preferences.
And I live in this house. Yeah.
Say it again, sorry.
And I live in this kind of house, and I have two kids.
Yeah. But all of that is actually describing a story. It doesn't really explain that which is hearing and seeing and feeling in this moment. So when we investigate that, which simply takes a focus of attention, it's not really anything like an attainment or something that we, you know, have to work at. It just requires genuine, deep curiosity to find out more about who you really are. When we investigate that which is hearing and seeing and feeling, which is possible for anybody in this moment, we discover a different dimension of ourselves. It's right here already. But we discover a different dimension of ourselves. And I've had the privilege, the honor to not only to conduct this inquiry with thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, I guess, but to train a lot of coaches as well for them to be able to conduct this kind of inquiry. And what people generally report, and I mean ordinary people. I mean, it's not just woo-woo, new age, you know, alternative people. I mean,
right.
We work with bankers, and we work with people in Hollywood. And I've worked with people in Washington, D.C., and we work with people in big companies. So we work mostly with regular folk, you know, in all different aspects of society. What people discover when they pay attention to this question, at least for a moment, they discover that that which is hearing sounds is silent. It's still. That which is seeing color and movement and shape and form is actually formless. It's infinite. It has no boundaries. That which is experiencing the body is actually beyond birth and death. Now, that, of course, can be a taste. It could be just a taste for a fleeting moment. But a taste is enough to deeply transform your relationship to reality, because when you tap into that infinite consciousness, when you tap into this deeper sense of yourself, which is peaceful, it flips around your relationship to life. Instead of trying to get something, to acquire something and to consume something, it changes because this infinite consciousness which you discover is actually full. It's full of, it's the source of all thought. It's the source of all creativity. It's generous. It's humorous. And it's actually loving. It's naturally loving. So when we touch into that, and I'm sure that most people listening know what I'm talking about, at least in glimpses, at least in glimpses, we've had moments like that. Women often describe a moment like that in childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
People sometimes,
and most of our listeners, I think, are more awake, believe it or not, than other listeners in other day parts, listening. Yeah.
Definitely. I've been listening to your show all the way back to Art Bell, you know.
You go way back with us.
Well, is that way back? I listen to a lot of Art Bell, and I've listened to a lot of you, and I know that you guys, I actually want to extend a bow to you, because I know you've been shining a light on many things that people don't always want to talk about, and it's actually courageous, and it's a big contribution.
Thank you.
You're making to all of us getting more savvy about what's really going on.
It was my awakening.
Yeah. Well, there's so many things shift when we start to shake a little bit the commonly held beliefs and assumptions we have about reality.
How many people out there, Arjuna, aren't awake? They just haven't gotten it yet.
Right. Well, George, you know, I personally don't really look at it like that. You could look at it like that, and people do. I just don't generally look at it like that in terms of people being awake or not awake. For me, you know, I always try to put an ing at the end of the word, you know, awakening.
Awakening,
right?
Yeah.
Awakening. So it's something that's constantly available in this moment to all of us. It's an inquiry that's available in this moment to recognize the space around the thoughts, to recognize the stillness, which must be there for sound to exist at all. Sound has to exist in a medium, and the medium is silence. You see, form has to exist in a medium. Things with size and shape and color, they have to exist in a medium, and the medium is formlessness, is infinite consciousness. So the reason I don't really talk about people being awake or not awake is it creates another sense of hierarchy, another sense of better than and worse than and who's accomplished and who's not. And that's, I think, in a way, plagued us, you know, for a long time. You know, our history is full of those kind of distinctions. So with awakening coaching, I prefer to simply offer people the opportunity in every moment to get curious about deeper dimensions of themselves. In the same way, supposing that we shift the word from awake to happy, you know, I don't think we'd necessarily say, well, you know, how many people are happy and how many are not? Because happiness is something that's available to all of us, and it's something we would wish for everybody as much as possible, right?
Sure.
So in just the same way, the blessing of my life, the joy of my life has been to share this with so many people who don't usually think or talk about these things, and to discover how easy it is. It just requires freeing ourselves up from unnecessary limiting beliefs and limiting fears.
You've trained more than 13,000 coaches to help.
Actually, I've got to admit to you that an extra zero crept in there somewhere. I'm not quite sure how it got in, but it's 1,300.
Oh, okay. I was going to say 13,000. You probably did it at some superdome or something at one time.
Well, actually, I would like to have trained 13,000 because we'd be helping more people. But it's actually 1,500 now. So. My apologies for the misprint. I'm not sure.
Why doesn't the bank ever make a zero mistake on our checking
right.
account that way, you know?
Yeah, well, if they do, they take it back again.
Yeah, yeah, they sure
and
do.
So that's what I've had to do. I had to give you that zero back.
Okay, so 1,300 coaches. Yeah. That's still a lot of people.
Yeah.
And when you train them, what are you training them to do?
Well, okay, I'm mostly training them to ask questions. And that's actually the essence of most coaching. But the particular style of coaching that we do asks very deep questions. Very, you know, like the question that you started with at the beginning was a coaching question. You know, why are we here? Who am I really? There was a third piece you put to that. I can't remember now. I should have written it down. But anyway, you asked three powerful questions at the beginning.
Who are we? Why are we here? And where are we going?
Where are we going? Okay, so these are questions, you see. So if you get together with somebody and encourage them to really sit with those questions and to notice what is a belief and what is an intuition and what is an experience, you see, oftentimes we get actually imprisoned in the rigidity of our own beliefs. So, for example, you said, you know, who am I? Well, people develop all kinds of beliefs about who they think they are. You know, I might say, well, I'm a bit clumsy, right? Or, well, I'm not as kind as I should be. I could just make stuff up, but that.
Or they say their occupation. Sometimes a lot of people will be their occupation. You know, I am a police officer. I'm a mailman or something.
Which
like
is true sometimes.
Yeah.
But you also go on vacation. You also go to sleep at night, and then you're none of that, you know? So we get limited by holding on to things being true. And so with coaching, you're asking, what do we train coaches to do? We train coaches to ask people powerful questions. And I think we already discussed it, the most powerful question that you can really encourage someone to give their all to for a while is the question of, what is your deepest longing? What is it you really, really long for? And the kind of obvious answers, like a car or more money or, you know, more sex with more people or whatever, I don't know what it would be, or, you know, or getting married to that person, whatever.
Yeah.
These kind of obvious answers, they actually quite quickly evaporate, because most people are intelligent enough to realize that money, you know, it's a question of the law of diminishing returns. You know, I think by now there's been enough research done. I don't know if you're familiar with the Center for Positive Psychology.
Yeah.
For example, Martin Freeman. There's been enough research done now to demonstrate that money operates something like a bell curve. So if you're making 30,000-40,000 a year, then having more will actually increase your well-being. But in America, that levels off before you get to 100,000 a year. It levels off, and then there's a bell curve, has a kind of a, you know, a flat part at the top. But then, believe it or not, the research that's been done demonstrates that your relationship to money then actually drops on the other side. So going from making 250,000 a year to 300,000 a year, research demonstrates that it's often associated with a decrease of well-being. In other words, more stress, more conflict in the family, etc., more likelihood of divorce, and so on. So money is a good example that most people would say immediately, you know, what do you long for? Well, I long for more money. You know, I long for this or that. But but those things, and people who have near-death experiences quickly realize, it's the most common result of near-death experiences, which I know you know quite a lot about. When people have near-death experiences, one of the things they quickly report when they come back from that precipice is that their ladder was leaning against the wrong tree. You know, they'd been chasing after things their whole life that really weren't intrinsically fulfilling.
Hold that point, Arjuna. We'll come right back to that on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you still have a little time for the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD to benefit veterans charities, with so many people donating their time, efforts, and voices to this musical CD, and poems are there too. A couple ways to pick it up. You can go to Amazon.com, and in the search, just type in Holiday Magic Coast Style, or simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, under the highlights reel. Click the picture of the CD that you'll see there, and that'll take you to Amazon.com and pick it up. And even though the holidays are quickly upon us, it's still a great CD to have. The Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. And welcome back to Coast with our special guest tonight, Arjuna Arda. And his websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com, including awakeningcoachtraining.com. And, of course, his other website is his name, which will be easy with the link we have at coasttocoastam.com. Because how many people just don't spell that name correctly, Arjuna?
Oh, plenty. I sometimes spell it incorrectly myself.
You were talking about how those who have come back from near-death experiences truly have a changed feeling, a different outlook on life, aren't they?
Right. So, and, you know, we don't actually need to go through a physical near-death experience in order to have that ourselves. The thing about a near-death experience is, you know, it pushes you right to the edge of saying goodbye to all this.
And that's right.
As you get right to that edge, it leads you to question, you know, it leads you, you probably know that people report on a whole life review that happens as your spirit leaves your body. Well, we can actually, anybody can take the time to review their life. Anybody can take the time to ask themselves powerful questions. And what happens, you see, is we talked, I think, before the break about when we ask ourselves these kind of really powerful questions about what's your longing, it goes through layers. But almost everybody, I would say, basically, actually, it would be everybody given enough time, gets to a layer of longing that is hard to define. It's something that your mind can't quite describe, but your heart will not let you forget. And that, we could say, is something like the longing to come home, the longing to feel connected, the longing to not just give and receive love, but to remember love, to become love again. That kind of return home to yourself, we can find testimony to that in every culture, in every tradition. That kind of deep longing, when you really reconnect with it, it's a kind of a cellular memory of who you really are. That we can actually support people with in coaching. And as soon as the longing is ignited, it's not very difficult to have at least tastes of who you are deeper than the story. And the good news is that who you are deeper than the story is resourceful, is creative, is humorous, is naturally happy, and has lots to give into the world.
You had talked about how you work with business leaders, company leaders.
Yeah.
Have you found that they really need training? Are they, like, different than most people, or do they have their act together?
Well, obviously, you know, we're speaking in generalizations, but
yes.
One thing I have found is that people who have done something significant with their lives, people who have, you know, started a company and made it successful, or started a nonprofit organization, they've developed a habit of what Nike calls, you know, just doing it. Just like, don't think too much, just do it. Just, you know, get results. So that kind of attitude, when you bring it to a genuine curiosity about your deeper potential, that kind of attitude is very useful because it means you don't get bogged down so much in thoughts and concepts and beliefs. You're willing to ignore the kind of the chatter of the mind and go deeper to find out what's really true. So it can be that people who have really accomplished a lot they have a natural affinity for going straight for the goal.
You had mentioned stress, and you know, I'm a believer that you got to eliminate stress because it'll do all kinds of things to you. And I sent a little text message a few days ago to my one of my granddaughters. This one's in college, and I said, "Ari, how you doing?" And she said, "Papa, I'm so stressed. I'm working on my finals." And I'm saying, you know, and I'm telling her, de-stress yourself. Calm down. You know, study. You know the material. Just take it and get it done. But do you see a difference, Arjuna, between, first of all, stress as it hits men and women, or they take it on the same?
Yeah, that's it's a really excellent point. Actually, it's funny you mentioned that. My son is at San Francisco State University, and he's just doing his midterm finals right now. So I'm getting the same phone call. First of all, this kind of dropping into spaciousness that we've talked about, dropping into recognizing your true nature deeper than the story, I would say, George, that is actually the ultimate stress buster. You know, when you relax into that recognition of being one with everything, it's the ultimate stress buster and the ultimate energy boost in a way that has no negative side effects at all, unlike, you know, drinking a lot of coffee or something might have. So that's one thing. But then what's important in awakening coaching is not just to have tastes of this more expansive, free, and loving dimension of yourself, but to actually sustain it in day-to-day life. When we want to sustain anything in day-to-day life, we have to do it through the body, right? And when we want to bring anything into the body, the most fundamental distinction we can make about bodies is their gender. You know, there are tall bodies and short bodies, and there are, you know, bodies of different weights, and there are older bodies and younger bodies. But the most fundamental distinction between any two bodies is man and woman, because the hormones that work in men and women are completely different. And although men and women experience stress biologically in the same way, it's the release of adrenaline and cortisol into the bloodstream, the way that men and women combat stress is very different. In a man, stress is neutralized by the release of testosterone into the bloodstream. And for a woman, stress is neutralized by the release of oxytocin into the bloodstream. So what it means, actually, is that in order to create balance, which is another word for that that's been used historically as spiritual practice, you know, spiritual practice of any kind, whether it's prayer or meditation or yoga, it's a practice to restore balance to the body, to the mind, to the spirit. So any practice, actually, is going to have a different effect on men and women. And this is something that I think has been very much overlooked historically, that the same practice will not be the same for men and women. It's a fundamentally important thing about awakening coaching. It's something we talk about a lot, is that men and women, actually, if they're met with respect, men and women actually benefit from different kinds of practices.
And what do you mean by met with respect?
What I mean by met by respect is that we're not meeting somebody just to sell them an idea or to persuade them of some kind of agenda or to teach them something. We're actually curious.
At who they are, what they are.
Yes. Okay. And what their particular life story is all about, what their challenges are, and that's really the essence of coaching. That's what makes coaching different from teaching. Because when you teach somebody something, you've got an agenda that you want them to adopt. When you coach somebody, you get curious. Tell me more. Tell me more about what you long for. Tell me more about what gets in the way. Tell me more about your intuition of what is possible. And tell me more about what you've passed through and the challenges you've overcome. That kind of curiosity allows a good coach to treat someone with respect, to treat someone as their particular unique flavor that they're releasing into the world, that they're giving to the world.
What has, for you in your career, been probably one of the most frustrating aspects of what you've done? Where you just want to shake somebody and say, "Don't you get it?"
I would hope that I deal with those feelings with my own practice. Okay, it's an interesting question. And I think, honestly, the thing that has been most challenging for me, just like you, George, I mean, we're peas in a pod in that we both care about the world, right? Yes, you do? Why are you on the radio, you know?
I want to change it. I want to change it.
You want to make a positive contribution. You want to unearth things that are not right. You want to bring things that have been hidden to the surface. And you want to leave a better world for your grandchildren than the one that you were given to steward, isn't that right?
Yeah. And I want people to be inspired.
Yeah. Yeah. You've kind of, like many people, it seems to me that you've dedicated yourself to be of service to something which is actually collective. At least that's how it looks to me. It looks like that to me with art as well, that you've given your life in service to a better world. Well, I feel the same way. And so when I think about what's most frustrating, actually, it's this, that in order to be of service to a lot of people, to train a lot of coaches, it requires putting a lot of energy out, you know, like we're doing now. It requires talking to many people, some of whom will resonate and some of whom will not. And I think what I found the most difficult, actually, is the atmosphere of negativity and attack, which is so common on the internet, particularly on YouTube, but, you know, on in many arenas, that it seems to me that particularly in this country, we've got in the habit of treating everybody with suspicion, of, you know, fearing, of assuming the worst.
Right.
So that,
true.
I think, has been the most difficult thing, is actually just getting ready to go on this show. You know, my website was already posted, and I got like a horrible email just minutes before we went on this show. I go, oh my, how could anybody say something so horrible? And that for me, I think, is the most difficult thing. But when you want to, of course, years ago, you could publish a book. And in order for somebody to reach you, they'd have to write a letter, and it would have to go through the publisher and everything. But today, if you want to be involved, you put yourself out and you have conversations with people through social media. And I think the most difficult thing for me is actually the spirit of attack, which so often can be engendered by.
You have to get used to that. I mean, there are haters out there.
Yeah.
A few haters out there, not a lot. It seems like there's a lot, because the same few do these all the time. They have no life. Mm. All they do is sit at their computer, and they complain about everything.
Yeah.
They're generally very unhappy with themselves. Mm. And, you know, I've learned in my own life, you know, hey, let them do their thing, because they're hateful, spiteful people. And you can't get to those people. You really can't.
Yeah. Well, I just, in the way that you reassured me there, I just got a little taste of what a great grandfather you must be, talking to your granddaughter.
Oh, love them. I've got six of them. She's 20. The youngest is 3. And, I mean, they're magical little people. They really are.
Yeah. I can't wait to be a grandfather. I'm going to have to wait a little while, because my sons are just, you know, they're just young men still.
Well, tell them there's no rush. It'll happen.
There is no rush, but I'm still really looking forward to it.
It'll happen. Well, you know, what you do is fascinating. My pseudo brother-in-law, he dates my surviving sister. Mm. We call him Coach Bob. He's been on the program before, because, you know, he's a smaller version of what you do, Arjuna. But he truly cares about people. And this guy was with my mother, you know, when my father died, before I had a chance to get up there. He was with my family when my sister just recently died of brain cancer. I mean, you talk about a coach. I got to get him in touch with you.
Great.
Because, I mean, he's just a wonderful human being who is just an amazing person. But he cares about people, and I think that caring through a coach shows through to the person who's the recipient of that, don't you?
Definitely. What I've learned, you know, George, about that is that people have so many dimensions to them. You know, everybody. We can meet each other at so many different levels. So at one level, the most superficial level, perhaps, you know, there's a body, you know. Then perhaps at another, I mean, that's the most kind of, you know, physical. At another level, we meet as a bunch of beliefs and reactive feelings, and that's another way you can meet people. And there's layers and layers, and then there's the deepest level of all of us, where, in my experience, that's the deepest level is where separation dissolves, where you tune in to another person so with such attention and care that you recognize that the spirit, the life force that is shining through both of you is actually the same. And you know who know most about that is mothers who have nursed their children, because just a few days before, the child was inside the mother's body, so it was actually part of her body. And then she gives birth, and then she's holding her child and looking into the eyes of her child as she's breastfeeding. And in that look, there is both separation and oneness. So many women know that, you know, except when I describe it that way, they know exactly what I'm talking about. There is both separation and oneness. There is both another and not another at the same time. And if I had to find a definition of real love, I think that's how I would define it, that you meet somebody in a way that you can recognize the differences, but you can also feel the dimension where there's no separation, where the heart, the love, the awareness is the same. So when we're caring about people, there's all different dimensions, you know, and the particular way that I care about people, which is not necessarily for everybody, but it's what I feel called to, the way that I care about people is to help them to return back to that dimension of themselves, where there really are no problems. There really is nothing to complain about, because you don't have everything, you are everything. And then from there, you discover there is a unique gift that wants to give itself through you in a way that could not be given from anybody else. I mean, you're a perfect example of that. Nobody else could do coast to coast the way you do it, right? I mean, you're unduplicable, right?
Yeah, one of a kind, as they say.
Well, and there is so, you know, I think in a way, that's the great triumph of a lifetime, is to find that quality and to let it express itself that can only give itself through you. People who do that, those are unconditionally happy people. The people who have discovered their gift and discovered a channel, a vehicle for that gift to give itself.
You have talked about a nurse at an oncology center. Tell me about that story. We've got a couple of minutes here.
Yeah, right. Her name is Connie Kishba, and actually now she is one of our teachers in awakening coaching training in our school. She was, at that time, she was the senior research nurse at UC Davis Oncology Center. Now, UC Davis, you probably know, it's a research hospital in California.
Yeah, and a good one.
Very good one, yeah. One of the best in the world for oncology research. And her job as the senior research nurse was probably one of the most difficult and stressful jobs I've ever heard of. Her job was to be a liaison between the patients and the doctor. But here's the catch. It was a research facility. So these were patients who had exhausted all of the conventional treatments. They'd exhausted the possibility of chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, and the only thing left was experimental drugs that had not yet been tested.
Oh, geez.
Now, they didn't do that kind of experimentation with older people because it was thought they wouldn't necessarily withstand it, and you know, they were getting old anyway. They did this kind of experimental research with young people, kids and people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, who, because they had families and things to do, and you know, and they were willing to try anything. So her job was to be a liaison between the patients and the doctor. And whatever she did, everybody felt she wasn't doing her job well enough. The patients felt she wasn't advocating powerfully enough for their needs. The doctor felt she was exaggerating the problem of the patient. So she had a beeper on. That was back in the days of beeper. She had a beeper on 24/7, literally 24/7, because these people were in trouble.
Yeah.
So most incredibly stressful job, and she became an awakening coach. We train a lot of people like that, people who have, you know, professionals already in another way. She became an awakening coach, and she learned one of the innate brilliances, we call them, the kind of skills you need to be a good coach, which we call absolute presence, which means you learn how, through particular techniques, you learn how to be completely present with another person. And that totally changed her relationship to the patients and the doctor. She discovered that in a magical way she couldn't quite explain, she just had to show up and be there in this very present way, and everybody around her would change. You know?
Yeah, it's infectious. We're going to come back. We're going to continue talking about awakening and also take your calls on Coast to Coast AM.